This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This is Undaunted Life, a man's podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Let's get into it. A worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech, winks with his eyes, signals with his feet, points with his finger. With perverted heart devises evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore, calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment, he will be broken beyond healing. That is Proverbs 6, 12 through 15. Guys, thank you so much for being with us today on the show. We're so thankful for you guys. We're so thankful for our donors as well. Again, I always like to start out being thankful, and I'm so thankful for those of you that have partnered with us on a monthly basis. And I want to remind you and everybody else that I will be speaking live on May the 17th at Church of 1122, the main campus. That's the San Pablo campus. That's at 14286. Beach Boulevard number 2, Jacksonville, Florida. I'm going to be presenting my defeating pro-abortion argument. So a little bit of an update. We just solidified the time today, or actually it was like yesterday, but don't worry, you're not going to know it. 7 o'clock. So May the 17th, that is Friday, May the 17th in Jacksonville at 7 p.m. Make sure that you are there. It is going to be a fantastic time for you to learn how, as we especially go into this election season and all the stuff that we're going to be hearing about abortion, to where you can be equipped to be able to defeat the most common pro-abortion arguments that are out there. Guys, make sure you're out there, and let's keep this whole Church of 1122 momentum going, because we've got a very interesting offer for you guys. So, Joby Martin, my man, I was hanging out with him last week at the Acts 29 conference, and he gave me as a gift, he gave me 4 boxes of his books. So you've heard me talk about his books, and he's been on the show to talk about them as well. We got If the Tomb is Empty and Anything is Possible. So these 2 books, you hear him if you listen to his sermons. He constantly says that. That's like a colloquialism inside of that church. And he's got these 2 books that we just love here. And I have 65 copies of these books to give away. And they are signed copies by the one and only Joby Martin. So it's like, okay, well, how in the world am I just going to give these out? Am I just going to stand on the street corner and chuck them into people's open windows or something like that? This is what we decided. So Joby and I came together and it's like, okay, how can we support Undaunted Life, but also support the fight for the unborn? So this is how you can get your hands on one of 65, okay? 65 of either If the Tune is Empty or Anything is Possible. Anyone that gives a one-time donation through our website, okay, that's undaunted.life/donate, undaunted.life/donate. You can check that out in the show notes. Anyone that gives a one-time donation through our site of $30 or more, you will get one of these books. Okay, so this is first come, first served. There is no cutoff date for this. Like, I'll probably mention it on this episode, maybe the next one. We'll just kind of mention it until all these books are gone. But it's just the first 65 people or so that donate will get one of these signed books from Pastor Joby Martin. And here's what we decided to do. Half of the money is going to go to support Undaunted Life, and the other half is going to support the Hope Pregnancy Center, which is the pro-life pregnancy center here in central Oklahoma. There's one literally about 5 minutes away from my house. And so this is kind of part of the whole 10-10 Life initiative. Again, if you're a Church of 1122 or if you listen to Joby Martin, they're in this 2-year 10-10 Life journey. And one of the things, one of the tenets of that 10-10 Life journey is supporting human beings from womb to tomb, being pro-life from womb to tomb. And so any chance we can get to support Undaunted Life, but also to help babies be born, which is exactly what the Hope Pregnancy Center here in Central Oklahoma does, we want to be able to do it. So I'm so thankful for Joby for donating these books, signing them, and then partnering with us. So again, guys, go to undaunted.life/donate. The link will be in the show notes. And again, it's a one-time donation of $30 or more. Emphasis on the or more. Like, don't let the 30 bucks, you know, stop you. You know, you can go crazy. Let's save a whole bunch of babies. Let's get a lot of people equipped to be able to push back darkness. But here's the important thing. This makes sure that I know that you're donating to get one of these books, okay? So please, please listen to this. Make sure you put your name and your address in the comments section on the donation, okay? Make sure you put your name and your address, okay? Make sure everything's spelled correctly. Double check it. But basically, when you go to the website, there's a donation amount, right, where you can insert your $30 or more. And then there's a little box that you have to check that says, write us a comment. Okay. So click that box and then you can type whatever you want. You can, you know, tell us off. You can tell us we're the greatest thing ever. It doesn't matter as long as you put your name and your address in there and everything's spelled correctly. So boom, that's going to take care of itself. Now, before we get into the main subject for today, I need to go over the quick hitters that we're going to be doing. This is kind of like a little mini quick hitters bonanza because I've had a lot of stuff in the backlog. And so there's a lot more than normal, but I'm going to be a little bit shorter on the front end on this one. So let's just go over what we're going to be doing in the quick hitters. A Cleveland mother leaving her 16-month-old baby at home while on a 10-day vacation. Oh, I actually took this one out. We're doing it live. Not going to talk about that one. All right. DEI. Oh, we're not talking about that one either. Come on, Kyle. Goodness. This is what happens when you edit and then don't go back over it. So here I am violating my own rules here. So I may even be mentioning one that I won't be talking about, but we'll keep going here. A Massachusetts girls high school basketball team forfeiting a game after three of their players were injured while playing against a team with a 6-foot-tall trans-identified male. The mainstream media lying about the cause of death of trans-identified high school student in Oklahoma. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signing a bill banning social media for children under 14. I can't remember if I'm talking about this one or not, but I'll mention it here just in case I talk about it later. Scotland enacting a law that could send violators to prison for up to 7 years for engaging in so-called hate speech. Candace Owens leaving the Daily Wire and an Israeli military drone strike killing World Central Kitchen aid workers. Okay. But today we're going to be getting into something that Bill Maher said here recently. So here's the thing. For years now, I have been reliably informed that there is no such thing as someone who is pro-abortion. That's what I've been told. No one's pro-abortion. They're just pro-choice. That abortion rights are about healthcare and women's rights. That there simply is no slippery slope when it comes to the subjugation of one kind of human being over another. Well, there has always seemed to be a quiet underbelly to comments and philosophies like those that I just said and others. But unfortunately, for those who worship at the altar of child sacrifice, Bill Maher purposefully and forcefully and finally said the quiet part out loud here recently. So Bill Maher, if you don't know who that is, he's a very famous guy who was, he's a political commentator now, but he got his start basically in showbiz in terms of doing stand-up comedy and things like that. He's had a lot of different shows through the years, and he is what would be considered to be a wild leftist until we get into modernity. So he sees himself as a classical liberal, okay? But now the left of the Democratic Party, or I guess you could just say the left of the overall political spectrum, has completely outflanked him and gone way far to his left, so much so that Bill Maher, who has not really changed his opinions much over the years, now seems like he's center-left. He's definitely not center left, but the Overton window has expanded so far on the left side of the aisle that he seems rather reasonable nowadays, even though, again, he has not changed his position on basically any major thing that we see. Now, I disagree with just about everything that Bill Maher says. Just about every opinion that Bill Maher holds, I do not hold. But he is talking a whole lot more about the First Amendment and the Bill of Rights and different things that we should be guaranteed as Americans living in a constitutional republic. But I appreciate it. If I were to say something nice about Bill Maher, I would say that I appreciate the fact that he is candid regardless of what people think. So you can see that if you watch his shows or any of his shows that he's done, you can see that if you watch his comedy, he's just going to say the thing, right? So if it's like, hey, say the weird thing, he's going to say the weird thing. He's going to say the thing that he believes, whether you agree with it or not, he really just does not care one way or another. But a couple of weeks ago on his HBO show called Real Time, they got into a discussion about abortion. So in this clip that I'm about to show you, it's less than a minute long, he makes really an absolutely shocking admission. So let's go to the clip here.
You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing. Or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states? Like, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left on when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women, people who aren't pro-life. Pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that. What?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not
is
sure
that not your position if you're pro-choice?
Isn't that mainly because you don't like children? I mean,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
No. I mean, but if you are, you said you're pro-choice. That's your position too.
So again, he says the quiet part out loud there, and they tried to actually help him. Pierce Morgan was on the panel, and he tried to kind of help him say, that's kind of harsh, Bill. But this was the quiet part that I'm talking about. So I'm going to read the quote verbatim right now. They think it's murder. They're talking about, he's talking about pro-lifers here, okay? They think it's murder, and it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on it. And when he says that, there's kind of this uncomfortable murmuring in the audience, and there's the awkwardness from the panelists. But then he goes further to basically stamp his position, and he says this, is that not your position if you're pro-choice? That's the quiet part out loud, guys. That's the part that for the longest time in the pro-abortion movement, they have not been willing to say that. Again, they've pretended to be the pro-choice movement, but they are the pro-abortion movement. They're not pro-women being able to choose. They're pro-child sacrifice. So when I heard that clip, I was immediately reminded of some discussions I had with a buddy of mine, and I don't know if he would want me to use his name on the show, but let's just call him Jay. And so I'm talking with my buddy Jay, and the thing about Jay and I is we would have these great 2 or 3 hour long discussions, typically over whiskey, and we would agree about essentially nothing, but we just loved the process of going back and forth with one another, busting each other's balls, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you like that band. Oh my goodness, you actually thought that was a good movie. And then we would go back and forth on politics and on religion and on all kinds of different things. But one of the things that we talked about most often was abortion. And I would say it was probably the third time we had had a long discussion about abortion. And this is a fairly reserved guy. He's very, he's not type A. He's very introverted, I guess you could say. But he kind of got animated and he says, look, man, I just don't think the baby's worth as much as the mom. And I was so shocked that he said it because I knew that was his position. Intellectually, I knew that is what he believes. But then he said it out loud. But guys, this was, I mean, we had spoken in total probably well over an hour about the subject of abortion, going back and forth. And a lot of the interactions I had with him led to the presentation that I'm going to be giving, you know, defeating pro-abortion arguments, because I take the top 18 pro-abortion arguments and I show you questions that you can ask back that'll defeat those arguments and basically cut out the foundation from underneath the speaker. And it was just amazing when he said that, because I was like, he finally said the quiet part out loud. Because he's not confused about what's going on in the womb. He knows that's not just some sort of like human-esque gumbo. He knows that's not what's going on. He knows that it is a human being, a living human being that has moral value. He just thinks that the value is not equal to that of the mom. Now, he had his own reasons for that. And just like Bill Maher, he has his own reasons for that. But that is ultimately the position. So I'm going to go to my thoughts on this and then we're going to hit the quick hitter. So here are a few of my thoughts on what Bill Maher said. First, just thank you, Bill, for at least being honest. So like I said from the beginning here, that's the one thing that I've always appreciated about Bill Maher, even if I, you know, am annoyed by him or I disagree with him, is he's just going to say it. So he's not going to mince words and he's also not going to hold back. He's just going to say it. And so if you have an opinion, even if it's egregious, you may as well own it. You may as well own it. Second thought is the quiet part that I just described will soon be the loud part. And it will also be the majority opinion. So a few years ago, you probably remember seeing things like Shout My Abortion. You'd see these women make these Instagram posts and TikTok reels where they're basically saying like, look, this is what I'm going to be doing. Like, I'm going to be getting this abortion. It's not a bad thing. It's not a wrong thing. It's just a thing. And there's nothing you can do to stop me. And you would have these women that would wear shirts that would say the number of abortions that they've had. They would get an abortion, and when they were leaving the facility, they would do this video of them walking out like they're, hey, I'm walking on sunshine kind of a thing. And even people that were pro-choice, again, hiding behind the moniker of pro-choice, they would be like, oh, man, I don't know if I can get behind that. I just don't know if that's really something that I can do. But quickly, that's going to be the minority of people. The minority of left-wingers, people that love abortion, the minority of them will be the ones that are like, yeah, okay, I'm all for doing it, but I'm just not all for talking about it in public. They're just going to talk about it in public like it's no big deal. That will eventually be the majority opinion. And if you are a Democrat and you don't support them shouting their abortion, they will shout you down. We're seeing that now. I mean, look at Joe Biden in the Democratic Party. He's trying to support Israel while also pretending like he doesn't. And these people that voted for Joe Biden are following him around the country, shouting him down because he's acting in a pro-Israel way. I mean, that's whenever you're feeding the lion and then eventually the lion just turns around and attacks you, right? But my final thought on this in terms of what Bill Maher said is this is why we should never, We as pro-lifers should never cede ground to our opposition on the subject of life. And we have to maintain a pro-life stance in all circumstances. Okay? So guys like Bill Maher have said the quiet part out loud now. That will become more ubiquitous. And so these are people that support abortion for any reason, at any point of pregnancy, right up to the moment of birth, and paid for by taxpayer dollars, which is the Democratic Party position. So why are Republicans, namely and most recently Donald Trump and Carrie Lake, why are all these people going soft on the pro-life issue? Why are we going soft? Because again, the Democrats, I've talked about this before, the Democrats have signaled that if given enough time and enough power, they will ensure that the Democratic Party position is law here in the United States, which again, let me remind you, is abortion for any reason, at any point of pregnancy, up till birth, and paid for by taxpayer dollars. So why don't we just, I mean, that's the extreme left position. Why don't we just take the extreme right position? I do that mean right as right being moral and right being right politically. Why not just take the position? Why not just put your flag in the ground and say, regardless of the circumstances, because again, I've disabused you of the notion that you have to have an abortion to save the life of the mother. That's not a real thing. And even if a woman is impregnated because of rape or incest, that does not mean we give the death penalty to the baby. You don't execute the child for something that their father has done. That's not something that we're going to be doing here. Okay? So why not just stake out that position and say full criminalization of the Abortion Act, anyone involved will be held liable for murder, and just stamp yourself. Like, that's who I am. I am pro-life, and this is what I mean by pro-life. Because there are people that say, oh, no, I'm pro-life. And then someone's like, well, what about a 15-week ban? Oh, that sounds reasonable. Okay, well, then you're just not pro-life. Like, stop calling yourself that. And this is the problem. This is why I like doing these presentations in churches, is because people think by default that when you say pro-life, everyone in the church means the same thing. But some people mean pro-life, but yeah, 15-week ban sounds reasonable. Some people think, yeah, pro-life, but you know, we got to make sure that, you know, life of the mother, rape and incest are things that we take care of. And then some people think pro-life, like, no, we're not going to kill babies in the womb for any reason whatsoever. So again, I'm glad Bill Maher said this stuff out loud, but as pro-lifers, we got to get real. The fight, when Roe v. Wade was overturned, that didn't end the fight. It just started it. Hey guys, real quick, as you've likely heard me talk about on the show before, it took me forever before I started taking supplements of any kind. I was always nervous about taking like whey protein and creatine or really anything beyond that because I was just afraid of what was in the product and if it was going to like give me cancer someday or something like that. And I was always scared of these companies, these supplement companies, just cutting corners and using low quality products and eventually putting things in their products that could cause problems for me and my body. So I've always wanted to partner up with an American company that uses high quality ingredients in their supplements. And that's why I want to remind you guys that we are partnered with Jocko Fuel. So Jocko Fuel is Jocko Willink's American-based supplement company. So what are some of my favorite products that they make that I also use? They have the best tasting greens powder on the market. I love the peach flavor myself. They also make whey protein powder. The banana cream is my favorite. They make energy drinks, the Jocko Go energy drinks. My favorite is currently a tie between their iced tea lemonade and their pink lemonade flavors. I also use their krill oil, their creatine, their vitamin D, and also their sleep aids. And they make a bunch of other stuff like ready to drink protein cookies, which are actually really delicious. My boys even like them, pre-workout powder, and much, much more. Guys, if you take your health and wellness seriously, then you've got to put high-quality products in your body. Try Jocko Fuel out today by going to www.jockofuel.com. That's jockofuel.com. Use the promo code UNDAUNTED to get 10% off of your order. Again, that's jockofuel.com. Promo code UNDAUNTED to get 10% off of your order. All right, let's get into the quick hitters here. It's a heavy one from the beginning, so let's see if we can get through it. So a Cleveland mother leaving her 16-month-old baby, at home while on a 10-day vacation. So this is according to CNN. Jalen's cries echoed through the quiet streets of Cleveland in the dead of the night. The toddler whimpered and howled, but no one came to her rescue. Her mother, Crystal Candelario, was away on a 10-day summer vacation and had left Jalen alone in a playpen with a few bottles of milk, prosecutors say. A neighbor's doorbell camera captured the 16-month-old's frequent screams, including one around 1 a.m., 2 days after her mother left. But Candelario was hundreds of miles away in Puerto Rico with a male friend, authorities say. After a few days at the beach and another stop in Detroit, she returned home on June the 16th last year to find her daughter dead. She'd been gone for about 10 days. Candelario pleaded guilty last month to one count of aggravated murder and one count of child endangering. At her sentencing on Monday, this was a couple of months ago, forensic pathologist Elizabeth Mooney told the Cleveland courtroom that children experienced the most extreme separation anxiety between 9 and 18 months. She recounted Jalen's excruciating final days. The pain and suffering she endured lasted not only hours, not days, but possibly even a week, Mooney said, fighting back tears. This feeling of abandonment for days on end, coupled with a pain of starvation and extreme thirst, is a type of suffering I don't think any of us could ever fully fathom. The toddler was found dehydrated and emaciated. A judge sentenced Candelario on Monday to life in prison, marking the final chapter in a case so grim that the investigators involved described it as the most horrific they've witnessed in their careers. So, when I was preparing this, I mean, cause I talked about the story on social media a couple months back, and just an absolutely outrageous, almost unfathomable story. And even as I was preparing this episode, I was just in tears, and it was angry tears, just being reminded of this story, because again, this was a 16-month-old baby, and this woman leaves, I think she left two or three bottles of milk inside of her playpen and then just left. And so when you listen to the Cleveland police officers that responded and the coroner's reports and the different investigators and prosecution reports, you're finding a completely emaciated baby that was basically just skin and bones, covered in its own feces. The amount of sores on the body from having feces being in contact with the skin for the entire time. And then, you know, the neighbors hearing the baby's cries, thinking they're just normal baby cries. And then the baby cries stopped. And it's because at some point, mercifully, Jalen actually finally passed. So I pray that Jalen is with the Lord now. You know, just what a horrible, horrible story. And a lot of people are just treating this as like a local crime story. Like, oh, this is a Cleveland story. Now, this should have made international news. There should have been international outrage about this. And most people don't even know that it happened. And with all that in mind, ultimately, Crystal Candelario needs Christ. Clearly. You couldn't possibly be a Christian and do this to an image bearer of Christ. And all of us should pray that he reveals himself to her and that she accepts the free gift of grace that he offers. But I'm going to go right to my big takeaway here. So I established that point. So now let's establish this point. This woman should die in the same way that she murdered baby Jalen. That would be justice. I remember hearing about what this woman did and then seeing what the judge decided to do, and he gave her life in prison. And I'm not familiar enough with Ohio law. I don't even know if they have the death penalty for certain cases and what the prosecution actually put out. I don't know any of that. But if we were a serious country and a serious people, people like this would die the same way that they killed people. Again, I've advocated for, you know, child rapists and people that, you know, perform those types of satanic deeds, that they should be executed speedily and publicly. This woman should be executed publicly for this. Like this, there's no possible excuse, because you could see from her family, and later on in this report from CNN, it'll be in the show notes, you can check it out for yourself. They're like, oh, she had mental health struggles and that's what aided in this. I don't care what your mental health struggle is. Every person with a functioning brain, right? There are people that are mentally incapable of making the correct decision, but anyone with a functioning brain, which she clearly has, knows that what she did was evil. That this was this a selfish, narcissistic thing where you're like, ah, the baby will probably be fine. I need to go with my boyfriend to hang out on the beach for a few days. And so how in the world is it justice that she gets life in prison and that the taxpayers of Ohio or whatever county that the prison she's in is going to have to pay for her to live? Because she was relatively young. She was like in her late 20s, early 30s, something like that. So let's say she goes, like, she could be on death row, or not on death row, excuse me, she could just be in prison for a half a century. Does she deserve to live out her days like that? Do the taxpayers deserve to have to pay for someone like that to still be taking oxygen? I don't think so. It would be justice if she were put into an enclosure from which she could not escape, to be given a few bottles of milk and be left there. Left there where no one can hear her cries and no one can come and rescue her. That would be justice. All right, next quick hitter here. A Massachusetts girls high school basketball team forfeiting a game after three of their players were injured while playing against a team with a 6-foot-tall trans-identified male. Yes, this story is about as dumb as it sounds. Let's go to the New York Post for the story. A girls high school basketball team forfeited a recent game after three players were injured, including one who was allegedly hurt during a play involving a 6-foot-tall male player on the other team who identifies as female. The Collegiate Charter School of Lowell in Massachusetts forfeited its February the 8th game against the KIPP or KIPP Academy at halftime, with Coach Kevin Ortons deciding to end the game as his roster was getting depleted 4 days before a playoff game, the school said. Fox News reported that KIPP Academy girls team has a male player with facial hair on its roster who identifies as female, and local Massachusetts outlet The Daily Item, which also reported the team had a male player, said, quote, KIPP officials or KIPP officials refused to confirm the player's gender identification, unquote. So there's a lot you can talk about here. There are a lot of people calling for, if you know that there is a male, and I don't care what they identify as, but a male opposite a female in any type of competition, high school, collegiate, or whatever, that the female team should just not compete. That the coaches and the administration just say, we're not going to compete. You can forfeit us. You can dock us. You can do whatever you're going to do. I mean, that's something that you can do. But my big takeaway on this one is, where are the damn fathers? Where are they? I know in all this, you know, trans sports thing and all this Title IX stuff, which we're going to talk more about as we get some more of this information from what the Biden administration is doing, there are a lot of things to talk about. There are a lot of things to be concerned about. But I go back to the story that I referred to with the guy in Canada that was changing in a locker room with like 13 and 14 year old girls at like a swim competition or something like that. Where are the fathers? Where are you guys? Because I hate to think that it was only mothers in the crowd watching their little girls get beat up by a 6-foot-tall high school player. Because I know this is news. I know this is even bigoted to say there are differences between males and females. So just by this 6-foot-tall male playing the game in a male way, and you could even tell by watching the video, this guy would have not started JV for basically any team in the country. But he goes into a female space and he dominates. And these girls are like trying to grab the ball and trying to hang on. He's just ripping it out of their hands because he's physically superior to all of these girls. And he specifically hurt one of them on one of these plays. You can see the video online. You can check it out in the show notes. But the fathers should have stood up before the game and saw this clear male. Like, it wasn't a surprise. It was a dude with slightly long hair and a ponytail. But he had facial hair. It was clearly a dude. That this wasn't somebody that, you know, could pass as a female. Like, there was none of that. It was just a dude with long hair and a ponytail. And these dads are like, yeah, no big deal. Hopefully our girls win. Let's cheer them on. It's already girls basketball. You're like, okay, there's not a whole lot to cheer for to begin with. And you're just going to sit there and like try to cheer your daughters through it? What in the world are you doing? Now, as fathers, it is not your right to go up to this child, because again, it's a minor, that this male, and say to him, look, you're a boy, get off the court, we're not doing this. But it is your place as a father to talk to the coach of your team, to the administrators of your team, to the principal of your school, and also to all the same people for the other school and say, this is not happening over our dead bodies. There's no way that our girls are going out there. And guess what? If all those people disagree with you, you grab your girl, you grab your wife, and you grab your stuff, you get in the car and you go home. And that's just what you do. And every single team should refuse to go against these other teams that have males on them. This isn't that hard. Fathers need to start stepping up. All right, next quick hitter here. The mainstream media lying about the cause of death of a trans-identified high school student in Oklahoma. So this is according to the Daily Wire. They actually did a fantastic job keeping track of this entire story. So let's read their report here. Here we go. A medical examiner has determined that the death of Oklahoma non-binary teenager Nex Benedict, which became a national news story based on media suggestions that the teen died from a beating by bullies, actually died from an intentional drug overdose. In a statement, the Owosso Police Department said it waited to release the cause of death until the toxicology report was completed, KJRH reported. That toxicology report indicated that Benedict died by suicide, the result of an overdose of Benadryl and Prozac. The original narrative surrounding Benedict's death was that the teen died as a result of a beating from three girls who had been bullying Benedict and Benedict's friends. Teen Vogue reported when the story broke that a source who claimed to be the mother of Benedict's best friend told a local outlet that the cause of death was complications from brain trauma and that three older girls were beating the victim and her daughter in the girl's bathroom. The same anonymous source told the outlet that Benedict needed help walking to the nurse's station after the fight, and that Benedict texted a family member saying that the teen got jumped at school 3-on-1 and had to go to the ER. Benedict also claimed, "The girls had been bullying me and my friends, and I got tired of it, so I poured some water on them, and all three of them came after me. The school did not report to the police and is probably getting sued." Other media outlets followed the general narrative while also blaming Oklahoma law that requires students to use the bathroom that corresponds with their biological sex. So we're going to go right to the big takeaway on this one. If the story is negative and it involves either a member of the LGBTQ community or a person of color, you can never blindly trust the mainstream media narrative. Okay? Let's go back to 2020. Let's go back to St. George Floyd. So George Floyd overdosed while in police custody. Okay? He had fentanyl, norfentanyl, I think methamphetamine, weed, alcohol and other stuff in his system, and he had three times the lethal dose of fentanyl for a man of his age and size in his system. That's why he died. Again, I could put you in the same position on the ground and the same position with my shin across your neck and shoulder, and I could sit there for a weekend, and you're going to need a chiropractic appointment and a massage, but you're not going to die. It's not going to ever cut off the blood flow to your brain. You will not die. 100%. It's not going to happen. But it was a person of color involved. And the perpetrator, supposed perpetrator, was a white male. And so it was perfect. The narrative was perfect. And that's the narrative that most people still hold, is that a white police officer targeted a poor black man for murder. And it's simply not the case. Take this particular thing. What's convenient to the narrative is that non-binary or transgender children, people that identify that way, especially if they live in a red state, that they are being bullied just for being who they are. And if one of them dies, it's even better for the media. It's even better. Because this is the narrative they get to do. The narrative is poor non-binary girl beat up by three right-wing girls in a bathroom in a conservative state that doesn't allow children to identify as whatever they want to identify as. Gosh, it's just perfect. It's perfect for them. Their matrix of nonsense always ends up in the exact same place. But when are we going to stop just believing these narratives outright? I think most people on the right are starting to finally get the point to where it's like, hey, it's not just that we can't trust the mainstream media to give us the whole story. It's that we can't trust that they're going to give us any part of the story that is even relevant to the truth. None whatsoever. And so, again, we have to stop taking these stories at face value, because this young gal obviously had some major mental issues. Again, if we were a serious country, and we're serious about the problems of our children, we would look at girls and boys like this that have gender dysphoria, and we would have pity on them. We would try to get to the bottom of the story. And what we wouldn't do is basically pat them on the tushy and say, yes, your delusion is real. But that's what we do, because we've allowed leftists and liberals to take over our school systems, to take over large swaths of culture and entertainment. And then they get to tell everyone else what is appropriate and moral, even though they themselves have no bearing for what is moral whatsoever. They have no grounding for the morality with which they believe is true. And so in these types of situations, we have to make sure that we can pray for these young children, that we can advocate for doing things that will actually lead to their overall health. Because this girl needed lots of help. What she didn't need is people in the school system tutting her and saying, yeah, this is fine. You know, this is just who you are, right? The fact that Stitt signed into law this bill that says, hey, you have to go to the bathroom that aligns with your biological sex, that has nothing to do with the situation. But again, the narrative won out over the truth. This is just the latest version of that. All right, next quick hitter here. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signing a bill banning social media for children under 14. So this is according to the AP. Florida will have one of the country's most restrictive social media bans for minors. If it withstands expected legal challenges under a bill signed by Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Monday, March the 25th, the bill will ban social media accounts for children under 14 and require parental permission for 14 and 15 year olds. It was slightly watered down from a proposal DeSantis vetoed earlier this month, a week before the annual legislative session ended. The new law was Republican Speaker Paul Renner's top legislative priority. It takes effect January the 1st. I'm assuming that's January 1st of 2025. So this is just another example of DeSantis winning. DeSantis just keeps winning. Oh, but he doesn't have a good personality. I don't care. He wins. Oh, but he's not that interesting to listen to. I don't care. He wins. Oh, he's not that funny. I don't care. He wins. When it comes to legislation, when it comes to governing, he is the best conservative that we currently have. But apparently you guys aren't interested in winners representing the Republican Party, but we'll flow off of that to the big takeaway. Great job, DeSantis. Great job on this, but the parents should have done this long ago anyway. If you're a parent out there right now, I know this is one of my bugaboos, and it's like, oh, you don't understand. You have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. Like, you don't know what it's like to have pressure from all their friends to be on social media. It's your job as a parent to filter out things that are potentially dangerous to your child. That's your job. That's why you go and get, like, a golden doodle as a family pet and not, you know, a pit bull or a, you know, rattlesnake, something that will likely kill your child at some point or has a much more increased chance of killing them over a golden doodle. A golden doodle might lick you to death, might hit you with its tail a million times, but it's never going to kill you. So your job as a parent is to make sure that you filter out dangerous animals that could be around your children, to filter out dangerous adults that might be around your children, and also to just dangerous things that are deleterious to their development and to their brains, which is exactly what smartphones and social media are. The data are so clear on this now, and I'm so thankful for the just ubiquity of reports and studies that are coming out saying, yeah, kids shouldn't have smartphones and kids should not have social media. The only argument that I hear from parents is, yeah, but we don't want our kids to be weird. What? If you remember my back to my Foxhole episode that I recorded several years ago, Russ the Ringleader, I remember him telling me this about his kids because he's got 4 kids. And this was when his daughter was, you know, getting into high school and, you know, everyone's got a phone. Everyone's got this and that. And he goes, hey, I guess we're just going to be weird. I guess in this family, we're just going to be weird. But dad, all my friends have the new iPhone. I guess you're just not going to have the new iPhone. But dad, all my friends have Snapchat. All my friends are playing Roblox and all my friends are basically insert social media thing or thing that's connected to the internet that allows child predators and everybody else to get access to your child. But my friends all have these things. Well, I guess we're just going to be weird then. Again, let's say you're a person out there listening to this. And I know there's a bunch of you. You've got a kid that's a preteen or a teenager and you've given them an unlocked smartphone with full access to the internet and you allow them to be on social media. Give me the argument as to why that should be the case. Give me the argument. And I'm taking away from you, well, they're going to be weird otherwise, or they're not going to be able to interact with these people or the super Christianese people that are like, well, they need to know how to use these platforms so they can spread the gospel on them. I'm just going to say I haven't seen a whole lot of 14-year-olds spreading the gospel on Snapchat. I'm not on Snapchat, but I haven't seen any reports to that case. I haven't seen any kids that are, get full access to the internet, going into these chat rooms or going into these, you know, Twitch stream rooms or something like that, or playing video games with other people around the country, and they're doing it to spread the gospel. I haven't seen that. But again, the overall idea that we should give these to our kids, where did we get that idea? We got it because we do it. Because we got Facebook and Twitter and social media as adults. Facebook came out when I was 18 years old. So we didn't grow up with it. My first smartphone I got after I graduated college. Right? I think it would have been, you know, 2009 or something like that. And then when the iPhone came out, so probably 2009, 2010 is when I got my first smartphone. So my brain was already more developed than that of a 12 or 13-year-old. Again, give me the reason as a dutiful parent as to why it's better that your child have a smartphone with full access to the internet and social media. Because everything that I'm seeing, all the just generalized knowledge and wisdom points to the opposite being the best case scenario. Our next one here, I guess I am going to be talking about it. So next quick hitter, Scotland enacting a law that could send violators to prison for up to 7 years for engaging in so-called hate speech. So this is according to Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire. The specific law I'm talking about is called the Hate Crime and Public Order Act, and Scotland formally enacted it on Monday, April 1st. It criminalizes the act of, quote, behaving in a manner that is reasonable, that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive, unquote. In doing so, quote, the person intends to stir up hatred against a group of persons, unquote, based on one of the following characteristics, again quoting, age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity, or variations in sex characteristics, unquote. Anyone found guilty under this law can be sentenced to prison for up to 7 years. So the thing about this law is a few things have come into play. There are reports now out of Scotland that they are not responding to reports of theft or assaults or even like sexual assaults and violence because they are flooded with reports from their own citizenry of hate crimes. If someone said something that I don't like, or even people just jacking with the system, just calling to, you know, make up stuff that their buddy definitely didn't say, but might get them in trouble. And it would be funny down at the pub later when they tell the story. But the thing about this law is that it is very, very vague. And this is kind of what you get from people that are on the left. They're never very specific about their position, right? I mean, think about it. How many years have we heard the pro-abortion argument or the pro-choice argument? And then we finally get Bill Maher to just say the thing. He just finally said the thing. When you hear these people talk, it's just like vapid nonsense wrapped in an enigmatic language that doesn't even vaguely make a coherent point. But the vagary of this law is purposeful. Okay, so again, I want to go to, again, this is one line. This is one line. But it's behaving in a manner that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive, and that it would cause the person intending to stir up hatred against a group of persons. Okay, so let's go back to it. Behaving in a manner that is reasonable. What do you mean by reasonable? Who's the arbiter of reasonableness here? Who's the arbiter? Do we have one? They don't specify. And we keep going. A reasonable person who would consider to be threatening or abusive. So a reasonable person, we don't know what that means. And what they would surmise to be threatening or abusive. What do you mean by threatening or abusive? Because if I were to say, hey, I'm going to come over there, I'm going to punch you in your face. That's clearly threatening. But if I were to say, yeah, man, I'm not going to use feminine pronouns for you. You're clearly a dude. Is that threatening? Well, whatever their reasonable person standard is, right? And we keep going, it says the person intends to stir up hatred against a group of persons. Well, how do you define intent? Well, they don't specify that in the law. And what do you mean by hatred? Again, they don't specify that in the law. Could it possibly mean that a Christian in Scotland, there's not a whole lot of them left, but let's say you're a Christian in Scotland and you have a good friend of yours that identifies as homosexual. Is it hateful for you to tell them that, look, that is sexual immorality, it's abominable, and that's not something that you should do, and you should turn to Christ, and you should love Christ more than you love your own sexuality? Is that threatening? Is that abusive? Is that hateful? I guess it's just in the hands of whoever this reasonable person is according to the law. But my big takeaway on this one is, given enough time and power, the left in America will get laws just like these on the books here in America. Then we're going to find out who the cowardly pastors really are. Because guys, this stuff is coming, okay? 2020 in a lot of ways felt like a dry run for something that they're going to push on more later. And again, if you keep electing people like Joe Biden, which again, I still feel like he's going to win in November, and Trump people have given me no indication as to how they're not going to steal the election this time. Again, I still have not gotten an explanation as to how they stole it in 2020, but they're not going to be able to steal it in 2024. You guys still haven't given me that. So maybe you could help me with that as well. But why in the world do we think that, given the White House and perhaps two houses of Congress and perhaps expanding the Supreme Court and adding a bunch of activist judges, that they wouldn't be able to slam something like this completely through the Constitution, completely through the Bill of Rights, and down the throats of every American, specifically the conservatives and Christians here in this country? Because if we learned anything from 2020, and we learned a lot of lessons from 2020, it's that a lot of our pastors that are supposed to be shepherding us, they fold all too easy. They fold like an old cheap lawn chair. Oh, Romans 13 or something. Okay, government, like we won't hold service because of what you said. And again, I think a lot of people learned a lesson to where they were like, oh, we thought COVID was this thing that was going to kill everybody. And as soon as we realized that it wasn't that, we just reopened our doors. But some people, even after they realized that, they're like, we're going to keep them closed. Why? Because the government said so. Because St. Fauci said that that's what we needed to do. Because these government organizations full of unelected bureaucrats are telling us how to run God's church, how to run the bride of Christ. And so if something like this were to happen here, I can already see it now. Your Big Eva people, your Lecrae's, your mega church pastors that never want to talk about, you know, incendiary topics. So like your Stephen Furtick's or your Carl Lentz's or your Michael Todd's or any of these types of guys, your Craig O'Shell's, they're not going to say anything to this. They're just going to go along to get along. They're just going to be known for what they're for, not what they're against. That's what they're going to do. And they're going to say, you know what? It's going to be loving of us to just do whatever the federal government tells us to do. Again, I point you back to what Eric Metaxas should have taught everybody in the book, Letters to the American Church. if a few thousand more German pastors had been on the side opposite the Nazi party, there is no World War III, there is no Third Reich, there is no Holocaust. Tens of millions of lives are not taken in that war. If a few thousand pastors had actually had the stones to oppose what was so clearly not a movement of God. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but I'm certainly not going to be holding my breath. All right, next quick hitter here. We got a couple more left. Candace Owens leaving the Daily Wire. So this is according to Candace Owens herself on her Twitter account from March the 22nd. The rumors are true. I am finally free. If you would like to support my work, you can head to, and she gives her website and all that kind of stuff and directs you to all that. There will be announcements in the weeks to come. Okay, so that was her statement. So here's my thing about Candace Owens. Is there was a time when I thought Candace Owens was a very, very interesting character because she was a very seemingly smart and articulate black woman that was going against the narrative that we get from black women, which is that we are an oppressed victim. We have a lot of intersectionality because we're not only black, but we're also female. And so we're basically not going to be able to succeed in America. And she just was like, no, I'm not buying into that nonsense. I'm not buying into that narrative. But there's something that I kind of noticed about Candace Owens. So I might get the timing and the people kind of out of whack a little bit. But she was with PragerU for a while, and then she left PragerU, and it didn't seem to be an acrimonious departure from PragerU. Then she goes to TPUSA. That's Charlie Kirk's thing. And then she leaves TPUSA. Then she goes to the big league. She goes to Daily Wire. And I just remember it was always a little bit awkward. So they would do, I forget what it's called, but the Daily Wire host and Jeremy Boring get together like once a month, and you know they talk about different topics. Daily Wire Backstage, I think is what it's called. And then Candace Owens was on some of those and not on some of those. And when she was on there, she didn't really talk much. And when she did talk, it was almost like, why are you talking? Like it just, she wasn't going in line with the discussion that was being had. It was just like she was trying to get her main points out there. And then she had a very public kerfuffle with Ben Shapiro, who is the Daily Wire. Like he doesn't own the Daily Wire, but he's one of the founders. You know, he is the main reason why the Daily Wire is successful overall. I don't think that's debatable at this point. And so they had some public disagreements. And then she releases this. And I remember seeing this and thinking, oh, good. Like, I don't think, because she tends to leave places and leave them with a lot of fire, I don't know that that's a good thing. And that's a reputation that keeps following her. Now, I know a lot of you guys out there like her. There's a lot of guys that have told me, no, she's the next Tucker Carlson, right? Candace Owens is somehow the next Tucker Carlson, which maybe she'll become like her own thing that has her own gravitational pull. But I'm going to go to my big takeaway on this one. If every time you leave a job, there's beef and drama between you and those people, perhaps you're the problem. I've heard people talk about this before. They'll talk about all of their ex-boyfriends or ex-girlfriends, and they're constantly talking about, well, this was the problem with this one, and this was the problem with the next one, this was the problem with this one. And it's like, man, there's one common denominator in all these stories. It's you. I mean, think about, you know, Joby and I have talked about this when people are like, oh, Satan's attacking my finances. And then he has them describe how they, you know, use their money and how they spend. And he's like, no, man, you're attacking your finances. That's not Satan. You're doing a great job on your own. Like, come on, get your crap together. This is kind of one of those moments, and it feels like one of those moments. And I've always kind of felt like Candace was maybe a little bit full of crap, and that was on full display here a couple of weeks ago because Ben Shapiro was getting a lot of crap because Candace Owens left. So I think she was fired, right? So I think she was fired from the Daily Wire, and Ben Shapiro has been very consistent to where it's like, look, if you're a platform, then you can essentially... So let's say something like Twitter. Twitter is a free speech platform. You should be able to say whatever you want on Twitter. That's the whole reason, like, you know, Elon Musk buys it and they're trying not to, you know, basically tell anyone what they can or cannot say. They're just going to let the marketplace decide what is the content that they'd like to see, right? So that's ultimately it. But if you're a publisher, like the New York Times or Fox News or the Daily Wire, you get to control what is on your platform. So what was it? Tommy Loren years ago, she went on, what is that stupid show? The View. She went on The View and she basically said, without saying it, that she wasn't pro-life. And she gets back to The Blaze, which is where her show was at the time. And I guess Glenn Beck and the team was like, well, yeah, you don't work here anymore. Like, this is a conservative news organization. And you went on a large show, which shouldn't be a large show for any reason, but a large show with a decent viewership. And you basically said that you were anti one of the core tenets of what we hold to as a conservative organization. Yeah, you don't have a show here anymore. And so people thought that when Candace Owens started expressing anti-Israel sentiment, that was Ben Shapiro basically taking her microphone away from her and censoring her in some way. But Ben Shapiro was like, look, this is not a platform. The Daily Wire is not a platform. We are a publisher. And if you go against some core tenets of the people that run the company, you shouldn't expect to continue working there. But apparently, I might get the stuff a little bit out of order, but Candace Owens, via Twitter or something like that, challenged Ben Shapiro to a debate over Israel. And Ben Shapiro immediately says, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it in Nashville. Let's do it at the Daily Wire studios. Me and you, we'll sit down and we'll have a conversation. And then Candace Owens is like, oh, no. I don't want it to be on Daily Wire and I don't want y'all to profit off of it. And then, there needs to be a moderator and blah, blah, blah. And Ben Shapiro's like, look, we can put it on whatever platform, but if we put it here, okay, we'll donate all the money we make to a charity or something like that. But we already have the setup. We're already in Nashville. Like, let's go ahead and just do this here. Like, we don't need a moderator who's going to try to put their thumb on the scale of one side or the other. Let's just you and me get across the table and let's record it. And then she just basically ran away from the entire thing. Like, it was, again, you're inviting someone to fight and they're like, all right, I'm your Huckleberry. And you're like, nah, man, I didn't mean it. I was just kidding about. Well, I wasn't, right? It was one of those situations where it's like, she effed around and found out because Ben Shapiro was like, yeah, let's do it. And could you imagine the bloodbath that conversation would have been? Because when you listen to Candace Owens talk about Israel, you can tell that she doesn't really understand Israeli politics. She doesn't really understand the Israeli military. And she certainly doesn't understand the history of Israel. And those are three things that Ben Shapiro does a really good job of understanding. It's kind of his whole thing. That's why really the tone and tenor of his show changed on October the 7th of last year, is because like this is his area and he is an Orthodox Jew. And so, again, if you're a Candace Owens fan, I don't care. It's not sinful to follow her or something like that. But just keep that in mind, that when she challenged someone to a debate, they accepted, she took off. That's what cowards do. Okay. That's what somebody that's like, oh, I didn't think he was going to actually take me up on that. He did. And now I need to go pretend like it's another issue of some kind. And also, when you keep leaving places and you leave a wake behind you of wreckage, that's probably not a good thing. All right. Last quick hitter here. An Israeli military drone strike killing World Central Kitchen aid worker. So this is according to NPR. Israel's military says its investigation into airstrikes Tuesday, this was a lot of Tuesdays ago, that killed 7 aid workers in Gaza, concluded that the strikes were carried out in serious violation of military operating procedures and that senior military officers would be dismissed and reprimanded. The deadly Israeli strikes on the 3-car convoy of the food charity World Central Kitchen, running one of the most prominent aid operations in Gaza to address the dire food shortage, marked the first time visiting international aid workers, including one U.S. citizen, have been killed in Gaza during Israel's ongoing offensive. Okay. So a few things here before the big takeaway. If you think the Israelis did this on purpose, you're dumb. You're dumb. I'm sorry. There are no two ways about it. You have to ask yourself this question. Why would Israel coordinate aid in Gaza to supposed Palestinians only to blow up a convoy that would lead to international outrage? Again, because there's a lot of people that are telling me 100% without fail, Israel knew that these were innocents, that these were aid workers, and they targeted them for destruction. Why would they do that? It literally, like, make it make sense to me. Because there are some reports suggesting that these aid workers weren't so innocent, that they were actually coordinating with Hamas and it wasn't just to get food to innocent Palestinians. So that's something to think about. Another quick thing before I get to my big takeaway, is the Jews seemingly are the only people group in the world that are expected to feed the people that murder and rape their countrymen. Isn't that crazy? Because the Jews are literally the ones not carpet bombing the population of Gaza, that aren't just nuking everybody in sight. They're not performing genocide. And literally, they are making sure aid goes directly to the group that is responsible for murdering over 1,000 of their people. Because again, people pretend like there's Hamas and then there's innocent Palestinians and that there's no overlap whatsoever. Okay, these guys are wearing the Hamas uniforms and here's everybody else that are just, you know, under their tyranny. It's just not the case. There certainly are innocent Palestinians. There are Palestinian Christians that are under attack right now. There are children that are starving. There are men, women, and children that are starving. And that is a horrible, terrible thing. And that goes right to my big takeaway. The people responsible for that are Hamas. Those aid workers would be alive today if not for Hamas. Those people in Gaza would not be starving to death and not be being killed innocently, like as innocents rather, this would not be happening if not for Hamas. If not for a fundamental and a fundamentalist approach to Islam. Again, need I remind you that Hamas was elected to represent these people groups, and if there were an election held today, they would be reelected, almost assuredly. And so this idea that there's this, you know, okay, we can easily identify the people that are Hamas, and then there's a new subcategory called Hamas sympathizers, but they're innocent somehow, and then we have these other people that are just innocent. It's not that easy. But I can tell you that better than just about any modern military, Israel is doing everything they can to make sure that they don't shed innocent blood. Again, it'd be a lot easier to just bomb these tunnels, to just seal them off and let everybody that's underground just die. But they're not doing that. They are literally losing military members, Israeli military members, every single day by taking the careful approach, by trying to do the pinprick approach, by using a scalpel instead of a sledgehammer. Now, I'm not advocating for them to use a sledgehammer. I want them to preserve as much innocent life as possible as well on their side and the other side. But I am also in favor of them doing what they need to do, which is ending this conflict. The only way this conflict ends is if you end Hamas. Now, that opens up a bevy of other problems, which is this is a populace that actually overwhelmingly supports what Hamas did and would very likely allow a new regime to rise up that is just like, if not worse than Hamas. But that is a problem for later. The problem right now is you have a group of people that can't stay alive and you be able to be safe as a country. Because every day that Hamas exists, that Hezbollah exists, that Iran exists, every day Israel will be in potential threat. And their populace could be a populace full of innocents could be murdered. We just can't stand for that. All right, guys, before we let you go, we are going to do a quick resilience boost at Undaunted Life. Our mission is equipping men to push back darkness with content that forges spiritual, mental, and physical resilience. Make sure you support our donors and make sure, well, you're our donors. Make sure you support the people that sponsor this show. So today it's brought to you by Jocko Fuel and some others. So, and again, remember, if you want one of these signed copies of Joby Martin's books, every person that donates $30 or more and puts their name and address there in the notes there on our website, you will be able to make sure that I'm going to get one of these sent out to you. Again, that's undaunted.life/donate. And then in the show notes, I've got all the stuff that I referred to in the Bill Maher segment, but also the quick hitters. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Wherever you're listening to this, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a positive 5-star review. If you want me to come speak live at your event or on your podcast, just shoot me an email to info@undaunted.life. That's info@undaunted.life. Follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook and check out our website for everything else, including how to donate to keep more content like this coming your way. Just go to www.undaunted.life. And also, we want to thank the band Holy Name for allowing us to use their music for our content. The music on this podcast is their song Perpetua, which is off their self-titled debut album on Face Down Records. The links are in the description. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Remember, keep pushing back darkness, keep forging spiritual, mental, and physical resilience, keep seeking the Lion of Judah.